From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 19th day of September 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, there's been movement in Washington on two fronts. One would limit speculative positions in the commodity markets, and the other would allow farms smaller than 10 acres in size to collect program payments. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. The program on most of these stations will be an hour long today. It's our Harvest Hour edition. In the second half hour, I'll bet our guest, the president of the National Grain and Feed Association, will have something to say about our first news item. We'll talk with him, too, about the financial woes of the grain handling industry. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
In Chicago, on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this, the nearby December wheat at $7.18, 25 and a quarter higher. March futures at 7.37 and three quarters up 25 cents. And the May contract at 7.50 and a quarter up 24 and three quarters. December corn, $5.42 and a quarter, 15 cents higher. March futures at 5.59 up 15 and three quarters. And the May contract at 5.69 and a half, 17 cents higher. July corn futures, 5.78 and a quarter, 17 cents higher. November soybean futures at $11.43 and a half, 27 and a half cents higher. January futures at $11.59 and a quarter, up 29 and a half cents. And the March contract, $11.73, a settlement price, 30 and three quarters higher. May futures at $11.82, up 31 and three quarters of a cent. October bean meal, $3.12.50, a dime higher. October bean oil at $46.92, up $2.48 on the afternoon. October live cattle futures at $101.55 or a dollar and a nickel higher this afternoon. December at $103.25, up $1.52 and a half. September feeders at $108.25, 95 cents higher. The October contract for the feeder cattle at $105.85, up $1.67 and a half. And the October lean hog futures at $68.20 or 37 and a half cents higher. December futures there gained a buck to settle at $66.05. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on this afternoon. October crude oil futures at $100.51 are now $2.63 higher on the day. November at $102.75, up $5.21. October ethanol, $2.19.5, 5 8/10 higher. Natural gas trading at $7.50.5, down 11 6/10 cents. And the RBOB gasoline is trading at 9 3/10 higher at 2.57 6/10. Heating oil, diesel fuel is trading the November contract at $2.89 2/10. That's 9 cents higher on the day. And the October propane is trading 7 cents higher at $1.44. September gold futures are down $32.10 at $860.60 an ounce. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,362. It's up 3.42 on the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 77.67 is down 0.52, and the CRB index now stands at 359.45. That's up 8.43. The Goldman Sachs at 640.34 is up 22.75. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It says skies should be mostly clear this evening. Lows will range from 55 to 60. Tomorrow in the far southern sections of the two-state region, it'll be sunny with a slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 77 in the northwestern part of the two states to 84 in the deep south. Should be some great harvest weather in store for the region over the next week. A slight chance of a few widely scattered showers and thunderstorms across Illinois. That'll happen Sunday. Very little precip expected from this weekend through the middle and into the end of next week. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL, AM 580 in Urbana, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a very, very busy Friday afternoon in the financial and commodity markets. On the line with us this afternoon from Lafayette, Indiana, is not Mike Zuzulo, but Chuck Shelby in his stead to join us. Good afternoon to you, Chuck.
Good afternoon, Todd. What a wild week we had.
Oh, it's been a wild week. Let's start so that we make sure that we get this in. The cattle on feed report was released at 2 o'clock this afternoon. It shows on feed at 96%. 96%, the guess was on the average at 97.9, placed at 97. Guess was at 100.2 and marketed at 91. And the guess was at 90.3. What's that tell you about the cattle market?
Well, it continues to show that producers are not interested in really putting cattle in the lot. Shrinking numbers. Again, they're moving them out a little quicker. Again, they're not really keeping them in the lot. So a continuing shrinkage of cattle going into the feed lot, and they don't like keeping them there any longer than they have to. You know, somewhere down the road, that could impact us on the corn side as far as how much, usage of cattle are going to eat, how much corn are going to eat down the road.
Tell me, let's step out of this and back, not into the commodity markets in general, but into the SEC ruling today that does not allow short sales of, I think it was 799 financial stocks, but about 800 financial stocks. It sounds to me as if our financial crisis is simply worsening, and Washington is scrambling to try to figure out ways to stem the tide.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting they would do that. The other interesting thing is what happens, I think it's October 4th or 5th when they're going to remove that, exactly what happens that day. So, you know, it wasn't too long ago they were complaining about all those buying in the market and pushing it up. Now we're making efforts to stop people from the short sell side of markets. So, again, I think the thing we can take away from it that the government is attempting to control things, whatever extreme we're on the upside or downside. But I think the question has to come down the road, what happens when they decide to remove that, unless they extend it.
Yeah, the removal, I think you're right, is either October 4 or 5. They can extend it for 10 days after that if they like. But according to news reports, no longer than 30 days would they be allowed to control what's not any longer a free market, at least at this point.
No, and I think somewhat that may affect us as we go down the road in the grain markets and livestock. Again, the reality of the Chicago Board of Trade was we had relatively amount of trades could be made based upon the size of the crop, and I think we're headed towards that again where we allowed a speculative crowd to come in and it would go way beyond reality. And with what's happened with this crisis, I think there's a move to rein that all back in and get it back to this is kind of the reality, the size of crops, and this is somewhat what will allow people to hedge or play in these markets, so to speak, is going to be very limited compared to what it used to be.
Yeah, Colin Peterson and company yesterday approved something that would tighten up the reins on those speculators, actually.
Yes, and I think part of the government getting involved, if they're going to bail out certain entities in the country, they're going to expect certain things. So, again, that control of the government coming in, they are taking control in a lot of these markets, and that's going to have a long-range impact upon us. And, you know, some would say good, some would say not, but they're going to do what they're going to do at this point.
Now, on I think maybe it was Sunday evening of this past week, the Risk Management Commodities took a new position in the marketplace. Can you tell me about that, please?
Well, we were looking at the potential that there's more downside in here. We were looking at corn puts as a safety net, so to speak. I think with today's action, we can hope maybe that the bottom may be close to being established here. But that safety net was there. If these continued AIG and other funds completely got out and bailed out as we headed toward the end of this month here, the third quarter, we was really worried about the potential to break on through, see maybe 475 December corn, even as low as 430 were fears we had if this continued chaos was allowed to expand itself in the next 2 weeks. So I think we'll have to look at that next week and think if we can get some follow-through. is enough what the government did today to say those puts are maybe not necessary anymore. That's something we'll have to consider next week, Todd.
Yeah, so tell me exactly what it is that you did.
We bought some 520 D's puts, some $5 December puts on unsold bushels, or to get us to 75% of production sold. Hmm. And it was strictly a defensive mechanism against this money movement here. Fundamentally, we'd still be positive to these markets. You saw China talk about maybe the need to, corn. They need corn. Argentina stopped corn exports. So there were some fundamental positives going on, but the depth of this economic crisis kind of worried us that the potential to break on through to the downside may be there.
Interesting. I was just taking a look at the charts on the weekly, the harvest month or December, and that's a pretty big outside down week. Do you think there'll be follow through? Apparently not.
At this point, I think we probably stabilized the market. As we go forward from here, the outside market certainly, to see the Dow turn around and be as strong as it was something Mike's been watching as something necessary to see the rest of the economy kind of try to build a base and gain some confidence here. So that was a positive. And I think the other thing that's going on, commercial buyers looking at this price is much cheaper, as we've seen and gone by the last 2 months, that they're looking to step in here. And I think another key component up here, I was just talking to some guys we work with in Wisconsin and Iowa, that crop, again, Todd, won't be harvested there at least 3 weeks to a month out before they can even think about getting going. So, again, that typical harvest pressure that we usually see across the country is just not going to be that way this year. So I think that's another positive to see some commercial buying maybe come in.
Any final word from you before I let you go for the afternoon?
No, it just shows that the turmoil out there in the rest of the country, the rest of the world, certainly still affects us in agriculture. So we're going to have another probably interesting week next week.
Oh,
Todd.
And one more note from you. When will you start harvest?
I think maybe next week we're going to try some corn, so I think it's going to get going here in Indiana next week with corn and beans.
Good luck and be safe. Next week's National Farm Safety and Health Week. You know what I'm going to tell you, which is, Chuck, when you're out there on the combine, take a nap during my program, would you?
I always listen to you, Todd, and I usually, a lot of times, I will take a break and just sit there at the end of the field and listen to you.
All right.
I do pay attention.
All right. Well, at least and then you're getting a little break, and that'll help out and keep you whole through the season. Thanks much, Chuck.
Thank you, Todd.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, the House of Representatives yesterday voted to approve a bipartisan bill to increase the transparency, oversight, and anti-manipulation authority over commodity futures and options markets. The House overwhelmingly passed H.R. 6604, the Commodity Markets Transparency and Accountability Act of 2008. It's a bill sponsored by House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson of Minnesota. They passed it by a vote of 283 to 133. H.R. 6604 is supposed to strengthen trader position limits on oil and other futures markets as a way to prevent potential price distortions caused by excessive speculative trading. Speaking of Colin Peterson, less than 3 months after it was enacted, the House Ag Committee modified the 2008 Farm Bill yesterday in order to ensure that farmers with less than 10 base acres receive commodity program payments. Rather than letting farmers combine base acres from multiple farms to meet the 10 base acre minimum, the committee, on a voice vote, approved legislation suspending the 10-acre provision for 2 years. Chairman Colin Peterson.
We had to have an offset to deal with this, and so what we've done is we've come up with an offset of $20 million over 2 years by changing the IT, the increase in the IT account for RMA, and so the bill is paid for. And this will be a two-year fix for 08 and 09. One of the reasons for that, the sign-up for 09 is earlier than it is for 08. And We will deal with the other 8 years when we get back here next year.
The full House could pass the measure as early as today. It's unclear whether the Senate will weigh in on the issue before Congress adjourns for the year next Friday. And finally today, Momar Farms, that's the new owner of the hog operation featured in a video posted on the PETA website, has met with PETA to discuss the images of animals mistreated at their newly acquired farm. Momar officials say they're outraged, and they say as a family-owned operation with more than 30 years in the swine business, Momar Farms does not and will not tolerate the mistreatment of any animals under their husbandry. Momar Farms has retained a new management company to oversee the farm's daily operations. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you can listen to our weekend program. It's called Commodity Week. Just scroll down the page and hit the link for Commodity Week. This week, our guest is Glenn Ring. Commodity Week airs on some of these radio stations and on WILL at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday mornings, other stations at other times, but you can always hear it at willag.org. We'll post the program by about 5:30 this evening. Now up next, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus takes up the topic of climate change and agriculture.
Climate change is a hot-button environmental issue at the federal level. Congress has made this issue a priority, and it will likely be a priority for the new administration. Because agriculture and forestry can be greenhouse gas emitters and mitigators, this poses both challenges and opportunities for Farm Bureau and its leadership. Greenhouse gas emissions from human activities are blamed for an increase in average global temperatures and changes in climate. Agricultural greenhouse gas emissions include carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and methane. There is little consensus on the exact impact of these activities. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, agriculture contributes 7% of the United States greenhouse gas emissions. Ag practices that can cause greenhouse gas emissions include conventional tillage, fertilizer and pesticide application, ruminant digestion and manure management, and field burning. However, conservation tillage, crop and grassland retirements, tree plantings, biofuels, and methane management can reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Two primary scenarios are being considered to control these emissions. One is the carbon tax, and the other is cap and trade. A carbon tax would levy fees on products contributing to large greenhouse gas emissions, for example, gasoline, and require consumers to pay for that carbon emitted. The proceeds would go to research and development and compensation to mitigators adversely affected or adversely affected parties. The advantages of a carbon tax: one, would encourage consumers to more efficiently use consumer products containing carbon. Two, reductions would be achieved more quickly and efficiently. And three, government ensures that public research is conducted. The primary disadvantages of the carbon tax would be for consumers to pay that tax, whether or not the level is appropriate. Little political support exists for a carbon tax. The other scenario is the cap and trade. Politically popular is a market-orientated cap-and-trade system where government would place a limit on the amount of emissions that regulated entities, for example, power plants. Entities, including agriculture, exceeding set levels could purchase offsetting credits from agricultural producers or other greenhouse gas-reducing sources until they can meet the reduction levels through the technology adaptation. Advantages of the cap-and-trade would be markets would determine carbon prices rather than the government. Agriculture and forestry producers could financially benefit by providing these offsets. And three, private industry research programs would develop more rapidly than government-led programs. Farmers are directly contributing to the greenhouse gas emissions reductions through the use of various production practices, such as no-till systems, that sequester carbon in the soil. Many farmers are currently trading carbon credits on the voluntary Chicago Climate Exchange and the Iowa Farm Bureau played a key role in developing this agricultural carbon market. Forestry can also participate in carbon capture through tree planting programs. At the same time, livestock and poultry are looking for innovative ways to handle waste through digester and lagoon technology. Under either scenario, either the cap and trade or the carbon tax, agricultural producers will feel the pinch. Prices will increase for important agricultural inputs, fuel, fertilizers, manufactured products, and electricity. Many farmers feel tillage practices could be mandated and livestock methane management regulated. While regulating greenhouse gas emissions could potentially lead to regulation of agricultural emissions and limits on some agricultural practices, Congress has not proposed this due to the complexity of regulating these emissions. Agricultural cap-and-trade offset programs would have to be carefully constructed. In a market-based system, agricultural credits will only be purchased until there is an alternative. Also, agricultural and forestry carbon storage capacity varies throughout the country. Transaction and verification costs could be barriers to entry for producers, and offset contracts could result in restricting future land management options. Both systems must be carefully considered. Either would cost the economy through slower growth and increased prices. Unless countries like China and India agree to similar plans, America will face a considerable disadvantage in the world marketplace. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Any movement in the fields there?
We are seeing some samples come in, I would say, the north end of our area. If we don't see anything this weekend, it'll be the first of next week. I think we have some beans that are ready as soon as the field will support a combine.
And farmers are enthusiastic about what they'll be harvesting or patiently waiting to see what
patiently waiting. I think they're building them. They're looking at numbers that they could be disappointed in. You kind of get the self-protection thing where you don't go in expecting too much so you don't get disappointed. These crops right around here have had kind of a rough road this year. It was too wet early, and then it was too dry, and then it was too wet again. So it'll be interesting to see what actually comes out of this.
It'll be a testament both for the genetics of the soybean and another good test to see whether Monsanto and Dow actually have been able, DuPont rather, actually have been able to make that corn plant perform, won't it?
Yes, it will.
Now, what do you see in basis?
Basis, we've seen nearby bean basis really popped up to try and get us over this gap. Today, it looked like the processors were backing off. They're seeing harvester them in the face. So the straight new crop is a little bit better, but the quick shipment premiums are going away. Corn improved 2 or 3 cents.
You're in your bids for the day?
We are at 506 on nearby corn and 1119 on nearby beans.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the manager at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company's 10 grain elevators spread across Illinois. He joins us on a Friday afternoon in 2 minutes. Steve Hilberg will be here with the agricultural weather forecast. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Two Illinois Army National Guard soldiers have been killed in an explosion in Afghanistan. The National Guard today says Specialist Joshua Harris of Oak Park died after a roadside bomb explosion. The Guard earlier reported that the explosion killed Sergeant Jason Antonio Vasquez of Chicago. You may not think of polio as a pressing health issue, but some doctors are still concerned that even the remote risk of a resurgence of the disease is possible. Though area Rotary clubs have renewed an effort to raise money to try to eradicate polio around the world, Carl Clinic pediatrician Kathleen Buteau says the U.S. shouldn't let down its own guard by letting a significant amount of people go without vaccinations. Vic McIntosh says he's not running for another term on the Champaign City Council. The 62-year-old says he's looking forward to a break after he was being involved in city government for more than 15 years. McIntosh says his biggest accomplishments include getting the Champaign Public Library built and his involvement in local neighborhood groups. Meanwhile, the Champaign County Board has gained a new member. Alan Kurtz was sworn in last night. The 67-year-old Champaign businessman is taking over the District 7 seat vacated by Carrie Moline. One of Kurtz's first votes was to extend the city-county enterprise zone in Champaign, saying promotion of economic development is one of the functions of local government. Damage from recent flooding has closed a Chicago-area architectural icon for the rest of the year. Preservationists are asking for donations to restore the 52-year-old Farnsworth House in Plano. It was built by architect Ludwig Mies van der Rohe. The glass and steel home filled with 18 inches of water when rainfall swelled the adjacent Fox River. Floodwaters cover the home's marble floors, but there was no structural damage. The Farnsworth's owner, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, says it likely won't open to tours again until spring. The house last flooded in 1996 when it filled with more than 5 feet of water. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. On the line with us this afternoon is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberg. He's located at the Illinois State Water Survey. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Why don't we start out by talking about how much rainfall actually we had in the last 7 days or so. Do you have some good numbers?
Lots. Oh, yeah. We've had really some impressive amounts. The worst of it was actually up in northern Illinois and northwestern Indiana. We had parts of LaPorte County, Indiana, getting upwards of 13 inches of rain, basically from like the 12th through the 15th, which takes into account that heavy rain and then what came through Ike. It dropped off considerably further south because a lot of the heavy rain up north was actually due to this overrunning situation we had for 2 days prior to Ike coming through. The one good thing about Ike coming through is that it was fairly quick. That by the time the low-pressure system was moving through this area, it was moving at a 50 to 55 mile-an-hour clip. So it did not have time to drop a lot of rain. Nevertheless, we still did get anywhere from 3 to 5 inches of rain across much of central Illinois into northwestern Indiana. But south of, let's say south of I-70, there was not much at all. So the same area that got hit with Gustav coming through pretty much got all the rain this time, too.
And then we've dried out.
Yeah, we have. That's good news for the folks up north. We still have rivers in flood up in northern Illinois. The Illinois River is in flood down as far south as Peoria now. Kankakee River is still having some flooding. We're seeing some heavier flooding and major flooding in, for example, in Shelby, Indiana, along the Kankakee River. So we need the dry weather for that. And we need to dry things out a bit here in central and northern Illinois and Indiana for harvest. But it does look like we will pick up a little bit of precipitation perhaps in the next week or so.
And then if you look further out, what do you see?
Really not much of anything at this point. Looks like we could maybe pick up a few widely scattered showers this weekend on Sunday. There's a cold front that will be approaching the Midwest and Illinois on Thursday. That could set off some showers and scattered thunderstorms. But beyond that, not a whole lot. It looks like it will be generally warmer, a little bit warmer than normal, and pretty nice fall weather for the most part.
You know, the lows don't look too terribly bad. Are they about normal for the lows as we come through the next week? Or
yeah, we are running, low temperatures are running actually just about normal for this time of year. That range is now at this point of the month, anywhere from about upper 40s in northern Illinois to the upper 50s in the south. And so lows with the clear skies and calm winds the last few nights have been running at or a little bit below normal. So we have been pretty much what we call typical fall weather.
All right. One final question. What's the normal frost date here, killing frost date?
Here in central Illinois, it's about the 13th of October.
Okay. Thanks much.
Okay.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey, located right here in Champaign County. We'll say goodbye to a few of our radio stations. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll hear from Scott Moe in a moment. He'll help us take a look at the financial markets. And then Kendall Keith, who's the president of the National Grain and Feed Association. will join us for a call-in program to talk about his association and some of the credit woes that have been happening across the grain industry and how he expects them to make it through it. It all happens on this Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Scott Moe is on the line now with us to take a look at the financial markets. Good afternoon to you, Scott. Tell me how things are moving through an exciting Friday afternoon.
Yes, it is. Well, Wall Street's enjoying a historic rally as the government plan to solve the credit crisis restores confidence in the market. The stock surged in the biggest two-day global advance in history. The Dow has advanced almost 1,000 points from yesterday's lows. The financial stocks led the way as the government proposed moving troubled assets off their balance sheets and as regulators banned short sales of financial companies. At the same time, the U.S. Treasury announced plans to insure money market funds for the next year. Currently, New York advance decline is 7-1 positive in issues and better than 8-1 positive in volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 11,350. That's up 335 points on very heavy volume with just over 2.1 billion shares trading hands. Transports are up 50 at 5,089. Utilities are up 11 at 450. NASDAQ's up 91 at 4,081, and the S&P 500's at 1,244. That's up 37 on the day. Currently, we have 2,714 advance in issues, 478 declining with 19 unchanged on the day. The October bonds at 118.5/32. That's off 3 full points at 21.32, bringing the yield back up to a 4.36. Crude is up $6.12 a barrel, back at $104 a barrel, and the London Afternoon Gold Fix is up $6 at $869 an ounce. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 11,350. That's up 335 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with Wachovia Securities. Have a great afternoon.
Scott, before you go, are you still with me? Oh, he's gone. I was going to ask Scott Moe a quick question, but he usually doesn't get that in the afternoons here on the Closing Market Report, so we let him go for the afternoon. That's all right. Kendall Keith is with us. He's the president of the National Grain and Feed Association, and we want to have some time with him right through the top of the hour, 3 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. Kendall joins us from Washington, D.C., where he serves as the president of the National Grain and Feed Association. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, good afternoon.
Can you tell me about your organization first, please?
Sure. Todd, we're an organization, a voluntary trade association comprised of about 950 firms. Those firms are in the grain handling business, elevators, feed mills, grain processors, exporters. We also have a number of associate members in transportation, banking, and so forth. But we've been around for about 112 years now, and hope to be around for a few more years, but we work on transportation issues. We work on commodity trading issues, safety and health issues, and a number of other areas for the industry.
Let's start with commodity trading issues. Were you in support of Chairman of the House Ag Committee Colin Peterson's move yesterday to limit speculative positions in the marketplace, both for crude oil and then for the commodity markets, including those in Chicago?
Well, we think the bill probably is fairly soft in its approach. It gives more authority to CFTC to do that and more direction to them to try to deal with those issues. But it doesn't demand that changes take place immediately, and so there's some regulatory discretion there. But I think the clear message from the chairman is that he expects the CFTC to be a more activist regulator.
Yeah, and then let's move from that to another topic that's a little closer to home to farmers and maybe to some of your grain elevators. What have you been doing to deal with convergence? And I know you're particularly well-versed in wheat. Can you tell me more about convergence wheat and the problems it's had and how you've been talking to the CME group?
We've had a number of discussions with CME Group, and actually we've had a number of discussions with producer organizations too, and in trying to figure out ways that we can get better convergence, in particular on the wheat contract. Soy and corn have had a few problems, but not as much as wheat. And, the dialogue is continuing, but in essence, we're trying to figure out if there's a way to design a loadout system that compels the taker of delivery to actually load the commodity out such that the futures market pricing of commodities ultimately has to face the valuations that are there in the cash market. We think the valuations of grain in the cash markets are really pretty accurate, but the futures, because the convergence has not taken place predictably in the last year or so, we've lost that central pricing mechanism of futures. And that's not good for the marketplace. Farmers need accurate signals on what the relative values of the commodities are going to be able to make planning decisions and plant the commodities that they can best grow and that are most valuable.
For some of those who are not initiated, and we will have some listeners, we've talked a lot about convergence during the closing market report over several months and maybe a couple of years at this point, but maybe you could explain what convergence is supposed to do and what it's not doing at this time.
Well, convergence really means that futures prices and cash prices in the delivery market in either Chicago or Toledo, where you can deliver wheat under the contract, at expiration, during the delivery period when the contract is about to close, those two come together. They may be separated a little bit by a few pennies historically, but ultimately they come very close sometime during that expiration period. Sometimes it's not until the last few days. Most people, though, try to get out of hedges before the delivery process starts because you tend to get wild gyrations in price, and so there's more risk of carrying grain, either futures or cash, into the delivery period. When you don't get convergence, then in essence, the cash and the futures markets are disconnected, and that's not good for the marketplace. It says that futures are too high, really, relative to what the values are in the cash marketplace, and too high relative to what you can actually sell grain for in a cash marketplace in domestic and global markets. And so the lack of predictability there means that hedging, it means basis levels are more hard to predict. It means that the cash grain industry is more reluctant to aggressively price forward contracts because you can't predict what the basis levels are going to be. And that's the problem scenario we're involved with today and why we all have an interest in trying to fix the convergence issue.
I'm going to try to summarize that. It'll be a bit crass, I guess, but the way for those who don't follow the marketplace very closely, usually somebody is betting that the market will either go higher or lower.
Yep.
Which either means that they're planning to that they want to either take delivery or make delivery, and most of the time they want to get out of that before they have to do either of them. But the convergence part is where you would, if you were to ride that position all the way out, either take or make delivery. And at this point, there are times when that market doesn't actually equal what's happening in the cash grain market. So what happens in Chicago is not actually what's happening on the ground across the farm communities. And then that translates this way into the way grain elevators have historically handled sales made by farmers, that they've been able to take the grain elevator, sometimes will take that risk, allow a producer to make a sale any time of the year. And now that grain elevator owns the commodity when and if it were to be harvested, they take a position in the marketplace to protect themselves, and they've not been able to do that. So when you have a problem in convergence, it creates a backlog and a problem in the way producers can go about making sales at some points. Although I don't know that that's considerably a problem at this time, but certainly earlier in the year, farmers were not able to make sales of corn and soybeans and certainly of wheat as well.
Well, it's starting to, as credit is starting to ease up a little bit, the credit problem on giving it advances on and cash contracting and protecting those cash contracts with hedge is starting to ease up a little bit. But the problem is, if we don't fix the convergence issue, the basis levels offered on cash contracting are not going to be very attractive to producers because they're not going to be very close to what historical levels have been. And we think that can be fixed, and we think that it'll make the markets more predictable and more transparent for everyone. And I think everyone has an interest in making that happen.
How do you suggest it be fixed?
Well, we're looking at the compel loadout as one particular option. If we're not certain we're going to recommend that, because we have to convince ourselves that we can construct a system that will balance the longs and the shorts and still get the convergence. But other options are going to cash settled indexes if we have to. In essence, you take an average of 10 or 12 markets of what cash grain is being traded for in the commercial marketplace, and then at the end of the delivery period, in essence, that becomes the value of the futures contract, and futures contracts can be settled on that basis. And our industry really doesn't like that approach because you don't have access to physical bushels or accessing physical bushels through futures if necessary with that approach, but it would force convergence for certain.
One other note, would you also make available at this time? It's pretty certain that a producer is not able to make delivery. What's your position on allowing producers to be able to make delivery or make delivery small enough so that they can deliver a contract or two contracts as opposed to having something to be much larger than that?
Well, you know, we've talked about that internally. We've talked about could you construct a system where farmers and maybe smaller elevators that currently don't have access to delivery services, could they participate in the delivery market? And in essence, you would have to force regular warehouses that are part of the delivery system to put up a part of their delivery and storage capacity to allow outside groups that cannot deliver today to participate. There is a certain argument to that that's attractive. It says, y'all come and anybody can do this if you want to. At the same time, if you've only got so much delivery capacity today and say you don't think it's adequate because of all the volume you're handling already, if you ask the regular delivery warehouses to put up 20% of their capacity for rent, you know, for put-through agreements so that others can sell through and deliver, then you're taking away 20% of your capacity potentially, and so you're actually shrinking it. If the markets will work right, we have plenty of players on both the short and the long side, we think, to get convergence, and really that's what people should be concerned about. It's if the market is working properly, if the pricing on futures and cash come together at delivery, then why would anyone want to participate? I mean, it becomes a zero-sum game at that stage, and the markets are working. And in essence, when futures and cash are the same level, then there is no incentive to deliver the grain.
We need to take a break for just a bit. We'll come back and talk with you in a moment. I'd like to talk a little bit more, Kendall, about compelling delivery and then possibly what your feelings are about more delivery points. And also credit in the grain industry, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks much. That is Kendall Keith. He is the president of the National Grain and Feed Association, joining us from their Washington, D.C. office. You're listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. We're expanding this program to a full hour for about 4 weeks through the 10th of October and talking to some folks that we think you might find of interest. We hope so. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes when we'll continue our conversation with the president of the National Grain and Feed Association. I'm Todd Gleason.